chiming in means that we will go ahead and start this meeting. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Council President Cardoza.
Here.
Councilmember Jones.
Here.
Councilmember Ruben Vanderhaar.
Here.
Councilmember McPherson.
Here.
Mayor Steer.
Here. And now if you'll join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. I do need to have an amendment to the agenda under executive session. We need to also add Idaho Code 74-206B for the purpose of discussing a personnel matter.
I move we amend the agenda to add item 11B, which would be adjourned to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 74-206B for the purpose of discussing a personnel matter.
Second.
Thank you very much. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Consent agenda. Questions, comments, or motion to approve?
If nothing, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda as presented. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza.
Yes.
Councilmember Jones.
Yes.
Councilmember Ruben Vanderhaar.
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
That motion carries. Brings us to item 5A, presentation of fiscal year ending June 30, 2016 annual audit, Bailey and Company certified public accountants.
Cassie Zotero and the partner at Bailey and Company that served on your audit team. I'm going to hand out these copies to you.
Thank you.
So we will start with the bound copy first. And we're going to go to page 3 where our audit report starts. Okay, so the first part of the audit report talks about your responsibilities versus our responsibilities. And at the bottom it addresses our opinion on your financial statements. And you got a clean opinion, so that means that we didn't find any issues that we considered material. And then if you go on to page 4, these paragraphs talk about some other information that's presented in the financial statements that we generally don't express an opinion on. There is a section under the other information, the second paragraph, that talks about the information that we do express an opinion on. Those are your combining financial statements for your non-major funds. And there are some thresholds that have to be met for it to be considered a major fund, and those funds did not meet those thresholds. And then the last paragraph talks about the other report that we're going to cover, and that starts clear back on page 43. So this report tells you that we tested some of your internal controls and some of your compliance to see if we found any issues there. There's no opinion expressed. If we had found issues, they would be listed in this report. So the first part talks about the internal controls. The second part talks about compliance. And the last page, page 44, just tells you the purpose of the report. And then your financial statements start back on page 5. page 5 of the financial statements is one of two statements that are considered government-wide statements. So this takes your general fund and some of your other special revenue funds to a full accrual basis. Your business type activities are already on a full accrual basis, and that means that there's things like your net pension liability, your compensated absences, your capital assets. If you'd had any other debt, you would see that on here. Those are on this set of financial statements where they won't be on your general fund and your special revenue funds later on. And the second page of that statement, of the government-wide statements, is on page 6. And that just tells you your revenue and expenses on that full accrual basis. And then page 7, it starts with your fund financial statements. And this is your general fund and your special revenue funds. And then page 8 and page 10 reconcile your governmental funds to your government-wide statements. And so page 9 is your revenue and expenses on that general fund and the special revenue funds. And then on page 11, that gives a little more information, a little bit better breakdown of what your business type activities consist of, what funds those make up. So you can see your water and sewer, irrigation, trash, and well mitigation. And that's that first couple of pages there, 11 and 12, are essentially the equivalent to your balance sheet. Page 13 is your revenue and expenses, page 13 and 14. Page 15 and 16 on through page 18 are your cash flow statement for those business type activities. And then page 19 is for your one agency fund. And then your notes to the financial statements start on page 20. Page 20 through 24 are just general information. There's not a lot of specific information about the city in there. It does cover information about your different categories of fund balance and money that you have set aside, you've assigned for specific purposes. And it talks about what restrictions you do have on some of your money. And then note 2 starts on page 24 that talks about your cash and investments. You had some of your funds that were not covered by federal depository insurance or collateral at the end of the year. That's at a point in time. The banks that you're with, as long as they're fairly secure banks, they're not having a lot of issues, it's probably not a huge deal, but it's something to look into as the city grows to consider having those accounts collateralized. And page 25 continues with that note, talks about what your intent is with your cash and investments, what your risk could be with those, and then page 26 goes into what your summary is of that investments in cash. So you have some money in the external investment pool, that's your only real investment, and the rest of your funds are in banks. And then note 3 talks about money that was due to your governmental funds during the year, and that's from other governments. It gives a breakdown of what that money consists of. Note 4 talks about that your paid time off due to your employees at the end of the year, and how much was earned, how much was used. Note 5 that starts on page 27 talks about Percy, essentially. So there's a lot of information in this note that goes on for quite a few pages that talks about information that's more specific to Percy than it is to the city. But it does give you some information about what that deferred inflow, outflow, and net pension liability numbers are that are sitting on that net position statement. And that note goes on, like I said, for quite a few pages, clear till the end of page 30. So note 6 is a boilerplate note on page 31. That talks about generally that your city is exposed to some risks, but you've purchased some insurance to help with those risks. And then note 7 talks about any leases that you had that were over 12 months long and that are going to continue out for a few years and what those minimum payments are expected to be over the next 4 years. Note 8 tells the reader that you have some credit available to you, not a lot. There's some credit cards there. And that there was a little bit of it in use at the end of the year. Note 9 gives a summary of your capital assets for both your governmental funds and your business type activities, and that note continues on to page 32. And note 10 talks about a donation of land that happened subsequent to year end. So that kind of information, when it's a significant transaction, has to be disclosed in your financial statements. Note 11 talks about the transfer that occurred during the year from your general fund to your capital outlay fund that was for budgeting for capital projects. And then on pages 34 and 35, those give a little bit more summary information on that net pension liability and those deferred inflows and outflows. And eventually you'll end up with 10 years listed for these schedules. And then on page 36, this is a budgetary comparison schedule for your general fund. And you would have a schedule for any special revenue funds that are also considered major. So you'll see a schedule on the next page there for your latecomers fee fund. And then note 38 does have to disclose that in your latecomers fee fund you had not budgeted as much as you spent. And it tells you by how much there you were under budget. And then page 39 through page 40 give a more detailed breakdown of what your general fund budget to actual comparison consists of. Page 41 is your combining statements of those non-major special revenue funds and your capital project funds. And so you have basically your balance sheet, and then on 42 your revenue and expense for that. And that is your financial statements. Anybody has any questions on that information?
Very nice. Thank you very much.
There is one letter.
Any questions?
No.
Okay.
There is one letter that's loose in here, and it's just basically standard language in there. There's nothing that's specific that's different from what you've seen in prior years. So if we had any internal control deficiencies that we felt weren't large enough to be considered a finding, they would be listed in here.
Good. Thank you very much. It's always nice to get a clean audit report.
Yep. All right.
All right. We appreciate your time very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That leads us to item 6A. Public hearing and consideration to approve case number 17-02-S, subdivision for Sailor Shores Meadow, subdivision number 2. Do we have the applicant here to present?
Yes, Thomas Dale.
Okay. If you would just step up to the mic here and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Council President Cardoza, other members of the City Council. My name is Tom Mayle, and I reside at 885 West Brush Road, Eagle, Idaho. We're here before the council tonight requesting the approval of the P&Z submittal regarding Sailor Shores Subdivision Number 2. By way of a little history, company in which I'm a member started Sailor Shores Meadows Phase 1. It's a 26 lot subdivision to the north of the current proposal, and all we're doing here is we would add 8 more lots to the existing 26. We've had a very good run at it, in our opinion. We've have 5 houses already built on the first 26. This addition would carry that through in the same style of homes that we've been building in Sailor Shores Phase 1. The other advantage to both the city and to the residents of Sailor Shores 1 is that the addition would make it easier for people to leave the current subdivision and make access to South Sailor Place. Right now there's a dead end on Sailor Shores 1, and this particular project would tie into that, carry city services out from that dead end street, and we would access East or South Sailor Place. So we think Phase 1 has gone well, and we're hoping be optimistic about phase two. We think it's an asset to the community. It's in an area that, quite frankly, lends itself to this kind of infill development. So, any questions?
Okay.
Any concerns?
Questions? None at this time. Thank you. So this is a public hearing. I didn't have anyone to sign up on this sheet. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify in this case that didn't get a chance to sign up? Okay, seeing none, we will move forward. So we will, as a matter of procedure, just open this case for a public hearing. Once again, I'll ask, is there anybody who wishes to testify in this matter? If not, if we can have a motion to close the public hearing.
I move we close public hearing.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to close the public hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. And the matter is before council. Trevor, did you have anything that you wish to add to the proceedings?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. Just for the record, Trevor Kessner, Cuna City Planner, 751 West 4th Street. I just wanted to add that the Planning and Zoning Commission approved a design review for the subdivision common area landscaping on May 23rd. They recommended approval to City Council for the subdivision on June 13th. Applicant has indicated he's in agreement with the proposed conditions of approval. And staff concludes the subdivision application complies with goals and policies within comp plan, future land use map, Title VI of Cuna City Code for subdivision regulations, and report a recommendation to the council.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, council, question is rightly before the council. Is there any further discussion or consider for a motion?
As Trevor noted, and as P&Z discussed, it looks like the proposal is consistent with our comp plan. It enhances some of our pedestrian and vehicle connections, and looks like it'll use services, and just seems to be in concert with all of our requirements. So I would move we approve case number 17-01-S with the conditions of approval as listed in the packet.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to action is at 17-02. Dash S.
Yes, was there a typo in the
okay.
packet?
Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Case number 17-02-S is approved. Item B is a public hearing and consideration to approve case number 17-02-ZC, rezone for Darius Ellison, one call restoration. And I didn't see anyone to sign up to testify in this. Is there anybody who wished to sign in this case who didn't get a chance to? Do we have the applicant? Okay. If you would just state your name and address for the record.
Darius Ellison, 1131 Gila Drive, CUNA, 83634. And, yeah, we're just trying to turn in the what was previously used as a commercial lot into a true commercial, getting the rezoning for that for our business, or put our business front there. We're approved by planning and zoning, so trying to get our final approval on that.
Okay.
Questions?
No? Okay, thank you. Jace, did you have anything you wanted to add to that? Jace Hellman, our planner one. This is our first time of him gracing our council. Thank you, Jace.
Mr. Mayor, council members, for the record, Jace Hellman, planner one for the city of CUNA, 751 West 4th Street. As I've been stated, they want to turn to a commercial use at zones R6 right now, and they want to go to C2. Of course, According to the future land use map comprehensive plan, this parcel is identified as medium density. However, staff views the applicant's proposed land use request, although it's differing from what the future land use map, it's very consistent with the surrounding uses. And if a rezone is granted per ACHD's requirement, the applicant will be required to construct a detached 5-foot sidewalk, or 5-foot wide sidewalk located at minimum 42 feet from the center line of Avalon. And this will add to that stretch of sidewalk that lies in front of Family Dollar on Avalon as well. We determine the applicant submitted all the necessary documents. All the noticing requirements have been met for tonight's hearing, and the application complies with CUNA City Code, and we're forwarding a recommendation of approval.
Okay. Very nicely done. Questions for Grace?
No,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, this is a public hearing, and I didn't have anyone sign in. Is there anybody who didn't get a chance to? Okay, so again, as a matter of procedure, we will open the matter for a public hearing. Once again, no one wishes to testify. Okay,
we get a motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Question is rightfully before council.
All right, yeah, it looks like it's in compliance with city code and our comp plan, and I agree that there's a commercial right around it, so the use doesn't appear to be inconsistent with the area, so I think this will be a great addition. And with that, I move we approve case number 17-02-ZC with the conditions of approval as listed.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded for approval of case number 17-02-ZC. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. 17-02-ZC is approved. Brings us to item C, public hearing and consideration to approve case number 16-04-S, pre-plat for TNT Estates Subdivision. Do we have the applicant who wishes to present on this one? Okay, Troy? Oh, that's why I just asked.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. So, yeah, please come forward.
Scott Stanfield, 2964 Stewart Road, Tuna, Idaho, representing the applicant in this matter. I originally brought the annexation to the city, it seemed like forever ago, but it wasn't. And we sailed through the city's process. I think we addressed all the questions at the time. Now we're coming back asking for a preliminary plat. The preliminary plat complies with the city's annexation or the city's zoning requirements, so we're comfortable there. We reviewed the staff report. We have no problem with any of the conditions except for one, and that is a condition, I don't have the number in front of me, but pertaining to installing utility, water, and sewer to the existing house parcel in the southwest corner. That existing parcel, there's an existing house there, and that's going to retain as the current use. Current rental, and we're proposing to put in the sewer stub now 5 feet into its lot as we plat it and leave it there so that if and when that parcel comes in for any kind of building permit, and at that point they'll have to extend that where it fits their needs so the sewer gets put in the right location ultimately. The water is right in front on Deer Flat on the north side, so they have access to water wherever they may put it in the future. So I'm not asking to waive that condition, just our for this project, an infrastructure to stop at the north boundary. And we're stubbing in from where our main line sewer is internally, stub it to the back side of that property, which is real close to the house. I mean, whoever takes over that lot, if they do something to develop that later, they can basically take the sewer from there and put it anywhere on that lot that they want to. So that's the only condition. Troy did ask that we, first of all, I thank Troy profusely. He's been such a help on this entire project. We couldn't have got this far without him. So, as always, thank you, Troy. He's been really good to work with. He's a real good asset. He wanted me to go over perhaps the turnaround, the central location in the project. You'll see a circle there within the project on your paperwork. We can easily fit. In fact, how we've laid out that is the inner diameter of that island. We want to keep this as it looks because it's just a sea of asphalt. We put an island in the middle, and we want to utilize the outer perimeter as primary handicap. Not all will be handicapped, but some handicap. That way, it's centrally located to the project. But the inside diameter is slightly smaller than the inside diameter for your emergency vehicle turnaround requirements. And the outside diameter is slightly larger than the outside diameter of the wheel path that emergency vehicles need. And that would be the tail stripe, the tail end of parking, because it'll be pulling parking. That tail stripe or the back of that car would be slightly beyond what's required for the outer wheel turn radius. And obviously that drive aisle, if you had the numbers in front of you and did the math, that drive aisle, in the sense that goes around that island, is actually wider than the minimum requirements of a drive line drive aisle that's straight. So we more than exceed the emergency vehicle ground turnaround. We will be willing to be required to put up some no parking signs around the internal island or in the drive aisle. That drive aisle would be posted as no parking if that helps, because we don't want anybody to park in there. In fact, all drive aisles should be no parking. We'd probably put that on for the whole entire project because we have a problem in circle, we have a problem in straight through drive aisles as well. Okay. So parking stalls will that be the only parking allowed? We will comply with the 20-foot access easement from the internal side of the project. The ACHD wanted that as part of their conditions of acceptance. So the final plat will show that as well. So with that, I stand for questions.
Okay. Question. And I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Scott Stanfield.
Scott. Okay. Thank you. Questions for Scott? Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. And Troy, did you have something to add? Of course you do.
Evening, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much for this opportunity to talk about this project. Just for the record, Troy B. Hunan, Planner 3, Cuna Planning and Zoning Department. Good evening, Commissioners and Mr. Mayor. The application before you this evening, 1604, Dash S, which is a subdivision pre-plat for the TNT Troost Family Project, which is located near, it's located on Deer Flat Road in between Linder and School Avenue. Last summer, as Scott recounted, it was annexed and properly zoned for a multifamily project here in CUNA. Tonight's meeting was properly noticed. The site was posted. Letters were sent out to landowners within 350 feet, and it also ran in the CUNA Memo News. I think Scott really touched on all of the main important parts. Staff will also just stand before you to let you know that it does comply with CUNA City Code, especially the pre-plat and subdivision code. Planning and Zoning did approve this on June 13th. Of 2017, and as well, they approved a design review for the subdivision landscaping. Scott and Jay Walker and Greg Bullock, they've been very good to work with. Anytime we've asked for something, they have provided it, and they've been very forthcoming with all of their information. Other than that, I would stand for any questions that you might have.
Okay, question for Troy.
Mayor, I had a couple questions. Troy, bear with me here.
Sure.
It's a busy weekend, so I didn't have a lot of time to do some research. I recall, wasn't there more trees that were going to be put along the north end of this lot to prevent? So I thought we had citizen come in. Live north of that was talking about some obstructions between this subdivision and their properties, and I thought one of the consensus was to add additional trees along that north Does that ring a bell to you? Or
yeah, it does. That was the case.
And I just, and I can't get my, when I blow this up, it just gets blurry, so I can't see it. But looking at the one that has the trees on it, I don't see very many trees along that north side. Are we still doing that, or?
Yes, that was handled during the design review.
Okay.
Public meeting.
So it's just not what I'm, I mean, it's just not what
it's
I have.
Not, it's
okay.
Not reflected
no,
there.
No,
but,
no problem.
But they will comply with
okay.
That.
Okay. And then wasn't there also talk about some sort of like a basketball court or some sort of playground area on this lot too that was some concern with it being on the east side because of noise and it was going to get moved? I mean, is there still going to be a playground area? Are you familiar with
that? Again, that was a design review,
okay.
Which only goes to planning and zoning.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But
you want to address it or?
Okay. I guess as long as it's been taken care of, that's all I was looking for. I just didn't see it on here. That's why I just want to make sure those things that were discussed was still moving forward with it. And I'll take your word that, you know, that's what.
It sounds like the applicant is
okay.
Still.
I'm almost thinking that that's a different property. A little further up the road and on this side.
Okay, maybe that.
As the discussion that you're talking about, I think was actually for a different property.
And maybe I'm seeing it wrong on the map, and that could be. That's what I was trying to.
I could be wrong. I can't.
You know, doesn't this go up school and Deer Flat?
No.
It's on the north side of Deer Flat.
Between school
between
and the Chevron.
Between school and Linder.
Yeah.
Closer to the Chevron.
Yeah, but if I go up school, I make a right on Deer Flat
mm-hmm.
Towards Chevron. Yeah, almost. I thought this was the property.
Okay, it's very possible.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, it sounds like that's what.
But we wouldn't have discussed it before,
yeah,
right?
Well,
so that's why I was thinking it was a different property too, because this wouldn't have been we wouldn't have been discussing this at any point.
This would not this. The two questions so far, and I'm not trying to say anything that I shouldn't, but the two questions so far, those are all handled through design review, which does not come before City Council.
So,
but it just recalls, I'm recalling that there's a property on the opposite side of Deer Flat, a little further up towards Linder, that's the one that all this discussion came out on. They have a berm, and it has a lot of old dead trees up in the front.
And I thought there was a private lane that went up.
And there were larger properties around that. Those were the people that wanted more of a buffer.
Correct.
Yeah, so I think that's like right about here on this map.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more west.
Okay. I'll have to go back and look. I'm not. All right.
Because there would be no reason that we would even be aware of any of this stuff.
Okay,
like, certainly we wouldn't have been participating in any conversation about it.
I thought maybe when the rezone, didn't we have to rezone this before?
Yeah.
Okay, then it's a different property, sorry. Yeah, then that's because I remember we had to rezone that property to a higher density, and that's when all that information came out. So, okay. Then I stand corrected. Thank you.
I'm glad we can work.
Apparently, there are the same concerns, though. So.
Okay. Any further questions for Troy? Troy, thank you very much. Once again, this is a public hearing. I do have two people signed up to testify. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify that didn't get a chance to sign up yet? Okay, we'll go ahead and open the public hearing. Jay Walker.
Mayor, I'm fine. I did not need to testify. I was planning on presenting.
Okay.
So
well, we won't let you talk then. Okay, and Greg Bullock.
Greg Bullock. I reside at 504 Bay Hill Drive, Nampa, Idaho. Thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. Almost a year ago, you rezoned this project for us, and it's been a long time in trying to get to this point, but we are here. And appreciate working with the city, all of their requests, P&Z. We're excited about the project. We're going to build some really nice buildings here. They're going to meet some of the needs of the community, especially HUD's requirement for a little more lower income and the higher density that they have in all of our comp plans. And so you've all agreed to that. We're just thankful for that and want you to know that we're proud to come here and we'll do a good job and make you proud to have this as a part Our only request is that we delay the hookup fees and the connection to the city sewer on that. This is become an expensive project. And ironically, I added up all of the reimbursements you're doing tonight in those resolutions, and they come out just about $3,000 short of what we'll pay you in sewer hookup fees. So this will balance out pretty nice. And so we're just asking you to delay that until that becomes a part of the program later to save us a little bit of cash flow on that end. So that's our request. Any questions other than that? Thank you very much.
Okay. Questions for Greg?
You're referring just to Lot 10, the single family home.
Correct.
Is that right?
Oh. That's correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate your help there.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Question? Thank you very much. Okay. That's all I have to sign up to testify. So we have a motion to close unless council has any more questions for any of the applicants or.
I move we close public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And case number 16-04-S is rightfully before council.
I guess I have one question for staff. Do we have any issues with the request to delay access to that one lot?
Commissioner Ruben Vandahar, I think what you're asking is, does staff have any issue with the sewer and the water hookup, not access?
Right.
Okay. Because access will actually be granted through the subdivision, which didn't appear to be part of the request. But if council so agrees with that, then staff can live with that.
Okay.
There wasn't anything, a memo in here, anything from either Gordon or Antonio?
There was.
Okay. I thought I read that somewhere, too.
Yeah, there was. In fact, planning and zoning staff actually followed the city engineer's lead on that, and he said that, you know, he recommends that they connect when the sewer and water is within 300 feet, which is code.
Would we be asking them tonight to waive the requirement of that code? Because it will be within 300 feet? Is that what's being asked?
It sounds like that's what the applicant's asking for,
okay.
Yes.
So I don't know if Antonio would be the one to speak to it, but I would be curious, like, do we have a history of doing this? Or, like, I just don't want to establish a precedent or anything. You know, I want to make sure that we're treating everybody fairly and we're predictable and, you know, it's not surprising when people come in, like, what they're going to get. So I just want to make sure, yeah, do we have any history of doing this? Or
I can't tell you right offhand if there's a history. I can't say it doesn't happen very often. The applicant just whispered to me, they're not asking for the requirement to be waived entirely. They're only asking that it be delayed. So they're willing to comply. They're just asking for a little more time before that requirement kicks in. They're willing to comply with it. They just don't want to do it right now because of the rental situation.
Do you have a date then?
I do not have a date. I think that where the applicant is going with it is there's a functioning well and septic, and why don't I let the applicant actually answer that question?
Okay. Thank you, guys. Sorry.
You're not public hearing motion. The hair's technical, but we will stub the sewer into the lot. Right now, it's not a lot. After we record the plat, it will become a lot, just like any other lot in your city. Like in the other lot, we are going to provide water stud or sewer stud across the lot boundary into the lot. So we propose to turn it there, just like you do in the other plat. This one's unique because there's a structure on that piece right there that we're going to create the plot of. That's kind of rare in the city, kind of rare anywhere. We really where you have an existing house that's going to be, that's now in the city and become part of this future plat. So we're stubbing the sewer in there just like the plat ordinance requires, but we're not making the physical connection from the stub to the house. We're asking for that to be waived until that owner or whoever comes in and applies for a building permit to modify that house, if they ever come in from, or anything else that requires a building permit. At that time, the city can legally put on that requirement. They can say, well, you're coming for a building permit, just like any other lot in that subdivision. That builder is responsible when he pulls a permit for getting from the developer installed sewer stub to the actual structure. We're not asking for anything different. The delay comes. The developer's not making that connection now. The whoever comes to the building from the contractor, just like any other lot, any other flat. The water main, they can access any time, right? It's right there in the front yard, so to speak, right on their side of the pavement. And we don't know what's done. They could come in some of the fire sprinklers or whatever. So we're just asking for that to be installed later. And that technically, the water, it's right there. It's when we started this project, the water was actually, I believe, on that property. There was some easements and right away given to ACHD, and then that became not part of that property. So there's a long history with this parcel. I don't know if that confused you or helped you or.
Yeah, what did you say?
Yeah. I don't think there needs to be anything. I mean, it's just like in a lot when the building owners apply for the.
Well, I do think it's distinct in the sense that usually a condition of annexation into the city is as soon as the city's water, sewer, and things like that are within 300 feet, like they do connect. So it would apply to an existing structure, generally speaking.
If that structure came in for a new water, sewer, if their septic failed, then they would have to connect. So I will add that too. If their septic failed, the health issue wouldn't grant another septic permit. They would refer to the city and say, yeah, you're within 300 feet, you have to connect.
Maybe staff can comment, because I was not under the impression that it's like whenever, maybe in the future. I thought it was more of a, when things are nearby, it's a requirement of being within city limits, you must connect.
To step to each parcel.
To existing, like just anybody on staff have the knowledge to comment on this or no?
So I think where that's come from is we've annexed properties in the city, and water and sewer is not readily available. And as part of the condition of annexation is when water and sewer become available, they're required to connect. So
okay.
I think it's a little different scenario than what you're thinking about. So we'll.
I was just trying to clarify because it sounded like you were saying it's an existing structure, so normally you wouldn't have a requirement. And I was of the opinion, I thought we would have a requirement that if frequently there is a requirement that applies to existing structures.
Council Member Ruben Vanderhaar, for the record, Richard Rhodes. As you'll recall, back in 2015, staff spent extensive time rewriting the septic system sewer ordinance. With an existing system, when that infrastructure gets in place of 300 feet, then they have to connect to that system. So that's where Gordon Law, who wrote the memorandum in this case, was getting that from, was our own city code that said what is in within 300 feet of that. I am not aware, since we wrote this, that we've ever granted a variance from this requirement. We've been pretty firm on our requirement to connect when it's within 300 feet. I'm not sure off the top of my head if this is within the nitrate priority area. I believe that it is, so we're very cognizant of that in the Department of Health and Welfare. So the city engineer's recommendation at the time was to connect when it was within 300 feet. The concern I have with this is there's no real time frame to do it. They may be able to live in that house for any number of years without having to get a building permit, and then they won't have to connect to the system. If council grants that, I would at least ask that staff and the applicant enter into what's contemplated in the code, although the variance from the 300 feet. A memorandum of understanding that's recorded against the property, that newly created lot, that advises that property owner or any subsequent purchaser that that's a requirement that when they get a building permit, they have to then connect to city sewer.
I'm wondering if, like, would a middle ground be we offer some amount of time? Because I understand the I mean, there's a lot of financial impact involved with the whole development. So I'm wondering if, do we think it would be some sort of an acceptable middle ground to say, like, within X number of years from the time we approve this, or?
Code contemplates 180 days, but if council wants to continue that to sometime bring past that, certainly we can work on something along those lines.
It seems like that might be preferable to just an open-ended, like, it might never happen.
This might change everything that we're discussing right now. The applicant just told me off the microphone that they'll just go ahead and comply with the condition right now. So they'll go ahead and they'll connect at time of construction. Provide the sewer, the stubs for each, and then also connect the house immediately.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's why you're awesome, right?
It was told to me. I didn't come up with it. Other than this. Any other questions?
Further question?
Thank you, Troy.
Okay.
I don't think so. Thank you. I appreciate the applicant's willingness to help us out with that. All right. I don't know if other folks want to discuss or.
I really don't have too much of a discussion. I'm still hung up. I think this is the lot that I was originally talking about.
So would you like to hear about it sounds like Troy has assured us that the landscaping thing you mentioned was addressed.
Let me ask you this, Troy, if what recourse do we have if we approve this tonight as it is? And what I think comes about, can we change it or require something to be added additional based on those previous discussions?
Are you saying, like, in a plat review or something, would we be able to enforce?
Are you talking specifically about the landscaping?
It's just mainly the length. I swear this was the one. There was another gentleman that was north of this property. I'm almost positive where this property is, that came in here and spoke that night. I thought it was when it was rezoned, when we rezoned this to one of the R-12s. And I thought there was a gentleman here that came in here that was opposed to it based on those conditions, and that the discussion was to add some trees along that north border. And then I thought there was some discussion about a basketball court being too close to something that was too noisy. I mean,
for the record, Scott Stanfield, 964 Stewart. I can shed a lot of light on that, I hope.
Okay.
You are correct.
Okay.
The original plan did show a basketball court, but at the end of that hearing, the neighbor kind of came down on me pretty hard out there. They said, I don't want that. The neighbors don't want that. It's noise, it's light, it's an attractive nuisance to us as neighbors, and I don't want that. So, okay, we'll pull it from it won't be shown in the design review, which is a P&Z approved. We took it off. We gave the P&Z, the hot pots and wine house. You know, originally this was shown, but here's what the neighbor had to say. And we encouraged the neighbor to come to the next round of public hearings if he felt we were misleading or anything. And we told him what we were doing, sent him copies of everything. And combined with that was the number of trees and the burning along the north side. I later thought about that and posed the question, where would you want the burn? If the burn was all on our side and all the trees were on the top, you know, that's going to encourage kids to get on top. And in my experience, they can peek over the fence because the fence is on the boundary. But now the kid's head's higher than the fence. They're looking down on you, and they kind of throw rocks. And I just encourage them to think about alternative ways to move, to reorient. And he kind of backed off all that. He said, yeah, I can see problems with everything. And again, I encouraged him. He's a younger fella that owns a property north, and his dad visits me on occasion. And I encouraged him to show at the public hearing. We kept them in contact with him, informed him when the design review was, because that's a public setting too. And we sent him copies of everything, what we were doing. And I didn't show up. He did come to, Mr. Bullock and I had one of our neighboring meetings after that for the preliminary plat P&Z at Stubbs Realty there by the Chevron. He did attend that, and that's when he kind of said, well, my mind's kind of changed, and we showed him our DR app and what we're proposing, and again, encouraging him to come to all the rounds of hearings, and he had a Does that help?
Well, it helps, yeah, and I don't, I mean, I don't have a problem. The way I'm looking at it now, I mean, you're complying with everything we're asking, so in my mind, I'm done, because you've complied with what we've asked as a city, so.
Think that forever and drive by there and say, now, wait a minute, and then you not trust me in the future.
No, I can understand that, so, but, I thought that's what it was, but, I mean, there's nobody opposing it. You've complied with everything that the city's asked for, so I personally don't have an issue with it, but I just thought that's
crazy.
That's what I thought. But
Pat, you were right. You were right.
Okay. Further questions or discussion?
There's a whole comp plan analysis that's included in our packet that I think all of it hits all the points that we would want to make, so I'll just highlight a couple things. This definitely complies with our goal of having a greater variety of housing types, so I'm excited about being able to offer some smaller housing, things without yards and that sort of thing, multifamily for our community. So I think that's a great part of this. It definitely complies with our neighborhood core concept. It includes, multifamily near commercial, within walking distance of lots of commercial opportunities. And it'll add a little bit of open space. So it looks like it's consistent with our code. I noted that the Planning and Zoning Committee approved, so I would move that we approve case number 16-04-S based on the facts in the staff report, the discussion we've had, and again, the comp plan analysis that's included in our packet, with the conditions of approval that are listed as well.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the case number 16-04-S. Is there any further discussion?
Mayor?
Yes.
Does the motion have to include the rental house? Since it was a issue?
I don't think so, because it's included in the plat, like it's one of the lots, and they've agreed to comply with code, so they're not asking for any variances or anything like that.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor.
Anything further? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. 1604-S is approved. Which brings us to budget workshop, fiscal year 2018 budget presentation. John Marsh.
Okay, good evening, Mayor and City Council. For the record, John Marsh, if you don't mind, I'll stay here. I'm looking at my squawk box here.
Okay.
I'll end up dropping it or something up there. Is that okay? Do mind?
We'll make an exception this time, John.
Okay, thank you.
You're a brave man to come after the audit.
And we don't have anything to hide, man. I'm telling you, nothing to hide. Full transparency. Basically, everybody received an email and on Friday, and I apologize it wasn't sooner. Did the best I could. Hopefully with what you received, it's clear enough on what we're proposing. And so what I'm going to do is start off real quick. I'm just going to give you a quick overview, just a quick rundown of what you're looking at and how it's laid out. And then we'll allow, I guess, questions and see how we want to proceed from there. That sound okay, everybody? Okay. So the first page you got has a summary or an overview. And at the very top of that, and it's on page one, it gives you the first line item is your total projected revenue that we have built into your numbers that fall on the pages that follow pages one and two, if that makes a bit of sense. That number is $6,303,388. The next line of your projected expenditures that we put in, that number that you had was 6772757. For now, know that it adjusted up slightly to 6807118. And I'll explain why. We did have kind of a last-minute change, some wires crossed on an allocation for some payroll. So that adjusted up by 34,361. The net that you had there was a deficit of $469,369. That deficit is now, with the adjustment that I mentioned earlier, $503,730. So the difference is the $34,361. And I'll let you know what that is real quick. We had a there was some confusion as far as what an existing employee, how that employee was going to be allocated in the role that we're projecting it to be. We've switched it back. It was in parks, primarily in general fund. It moved out to public works, and we've moved it back into parks. So that's why the change back up, 34,361. Is everybody clear on that so far? Everybody okay? Okay. So below those two lines, those three rows, is a block of information that slops over into page two, and that's the summary of significant expenditures which are included in the budget numbers above. And these are listed in order by the requester on the left-hand side. So there's no priority placed in any of them the way they're listed. They're just listed in order by the requestor. And basically what they are the major items that we have included in the budget. Everything new, everything proposed, some of them are ongoing expenditures, namely the Ada County Sheriff's item, payroll items, so new proposed employees. Everything else are one-time items. And it's broken down by general fund, and then any allocation to the enterprise funds are also listed. There are two small changes that I've listed on there. They don't affect the numbers overall, but it will help you in answering possibly a couple questions. I did have some questions from Councilmember Jones over the weekend, and so and I can address those as well. But the first item is just below where the Ada County Sheriff line is listed. I added one row there, and that's 24,443. It doesn't affect your overall numbers because it was already there. But what that is that's the City Hall reserve replenishments. So what we did last year, based upon discussion with Council, was placed an amortized value in the miscellaneous expenditures that essentially doesn't get spent. So those monies are basically meant to replenish the reserves spent to acquire City Hall. So by budgeting them, you don't spend them. They go back into reserves by default. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The second item I added in there was one that is already included in your numbers. I failed to include it on this front page to call it out. And that's a request from the clerk's office for a temporary file clerk extension. So there's a temporary file clerk position currently on the rolls right now. The request is to extend that into the new year for a nine-month period of time. And that total in the general fund is $20,359. Those numbers are already included in your totals at the top. One more minor change. And that is down there near the bottom. There's two parks positions that are requested, full-time parks positions. One is called a customer service specialist. That's been changed. That's actually a field employee. So in summary, there's two field employees being requested as opposed to one field and one customer service specialist. Does that make sense? And that's part of the reason for the change in the allocation that changed your total expenditures on the above side. So beyond that, the next block of information are items that were brought forward that were not included in your budget. They are items that are essentially wish list items, and there's one item on there from the Humane Society that I think the mayor will probably want to discuss with you. But they are not in your numbers, but they're items that are called out because they're fairly significant in potential items. Is everybody clear and okay on those numbers? Yeah. Okay. Okay. And the last item is, how is the city going to pay for that deficit above that's above at the very top of the page? And so there's a couple of ways, of course, one of which is triage some of the expenditures built in above, meaning we don't put them in, we take them out and arrive at a balanced budget. The other item is use carryover funds or reserve funds, which I've placed a number there. It's an estimator, a forecast number of $1.8 million for reserve funds that we forecast we'll have by the end of this fiscal year, by the end of September. And majority of that is from, the lion's share is from a forecast of planning and zoning revenue of about nearly $400,000 over where we thought we'd be. So it's pretty extensive. And so you have about $1,872,000 that's estimated in your reserves by the end of this year. So you could use some of those monies, all the monies, whatever you'd like to do, to fund some of those items that we've included, or fund some of that deficit, if you will. And the last item there is property taxes. I've not included any property tax levy increase in your budget numbers whatsoever. It's the same dollar value that was levied last year. And so I've listed there the options that you have before you. Of course, you have your 3% increase. You have a new construction rule value, an annexation value, and a foregone levy amount value. The total of all of those together, if the entire levy was utilized, is $266,046. So obviously, quick math tells you that that's only going to cover about half of the $500,000 deficit. So the remainder of that has to be made up with reserve funds if all of those items are left there. And I put one note at the bottom, and I think it's a very important note, and I'm not advocating property tax increases or anything of that nature. But one important element is that there's some items in this budget, these increases that are ongoing expenditures, namely the sheriff's budget. That increase is not likely to go the other way in the future. It's always going to be an ongoing expenditure year over year over year. And any of the other new labor positions, those aren't likely to go backwards. So there has to be some sort of a, going forward, some sort of a stable, ongoing source of revenue to meet those. And, of course, there's a variety of revenues, but property taxes is one of the significant items for you to consider. So with that, I've thrown a lot of information at you. Hopefully I didn't really confuse you, but I will leave it at that and see if we want to open it up to discussion, if you have any questions, anything of that nature.
Okay, yeah, questions for John.
John, I just had a quick follow-up. You talked about that you said there wasn't a line item for the City Hall replenishment?
Yeah, it's loaded in your budget. It's been there. It's in miscellaneous expenditures, and that is in...
But what's number four under other? Is that different? Four. On that list on the page one. Where under, you know, you go fleet, mayor, then other, and it says City Hall acquisition reserve expenditure year two.
Oh, did I include it? Let's see.
That's what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Or is that different, or is that the same thing? You're...
Sorry, I'm not seeing what you're...
Under...
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. It was in there. My apologies.
Okay.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Okay, thank you.
I didn't even see that. My bad. Okay. So I had it in there. Again, ignore what I told you earlier about the 24 full coverage. Thank you. Sorry.
Mayor?
Yes.
Could I, John?
Yes, sir.
Where do you get on the bottom of page three?
Okay.
You're coming up with $93,279 for the economic development position.
Sure.
I thought we had thrown a figure around about $50,000 on that.
Yeah, let me get you exactly
how does that double?
Okay, let me show you exactly how we calculated that. So. Okay, so what we threw in there was a gross salary of $60,000. It ended up being $61,232.12, and that's because we have a partial pay period at the end of the year.
Okay.
So we accrue those numbers back in. So in round numbers, it's $61,000. You've got Social Security, you've got Medicare, you've got health insurance. I built in just standard health insurance premiums, no family, no dependents, because not knowing what it would end up being. Your COBRA, dental, vision, group life insurance, PERSI, and workers' compensation. And that total, when you add all that up, accumulates to $79,879. And on top of that, we have projected expenditures for that position. So, so there's, of course, we've got to acquire a computer, we've got to acquire possibly a desk, a chair, some advertising, some legal publications, a little bit of travel, some training, things of that nature. And those totals are, I can get you the totals.
So the total cost of that position from 51 has elevated to 93.
Yep, when you add in all of the entitlements, it adds up quickly, very quickly. So the economic development position is, so the expenditures are 13.4 that we projected, and the actual labor part of it is 79.879, so the total is 93.279, which is what you pointed out.
Okay.
Yeah, adds up quickly.
Okay. One last question. Bob, new building inspector pickup, didn't we just buy one last year?
Yes, we did, Councilman Cardoza. This would be for the new inspector that we just got approved last council meeting.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, we've been talking to, or you've been talking to John about a police car. Could something like that be used for the building inspector? Are they undependable, or by the time we get them?
So what we're talking about is one of the SUVs, if that comes through.
If it was an SUV, it would work just fine.
Back to you, John.
John McDaniel. Chief Dussault, or Captain Dussault now, and I met with the sheriff about a month ago on that exact topic. And we're looking at the fleet right now. The transport team had to add quite a few deputies as well. And so I think the sheriff's thinking it's looking pretty positive that there would be something available as an as-needed basis, and so clearly there's a need. That's something that we did voice to the sheriff as well. So he wants to be a good partner. It brought up the whole discussion as far as the total cost and leasing of the vehicles. You know, I think it's about $16,000 a year for our shops, the gas, and the cost to have a vehicle that's pursuit rated. They're pretty expensive with all the equipment in them. And so, I haven't got an official answer from the sheriff, but the last time I asked the shop guy, our manager, who's in charge of kind of looking at our fleet's about 260 vehicles, he was also sounding pretty positive as well.
Okay. Your request this year is for two new vehicles, isn't it?
One vehicle.
One?
That the two okay. Deputies would share, yes.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Questions?
Mayor?
Yes.
I don't know if you can answer this, John, or not. Do you know how we arrived with that economic developer salary?
Councilmember Jones, I think Wendy had worked on that. Maybe she can.
Yes, it was the mayor and I had went over this and compared it to what Mountain Home was doing and scaled it back quite a bit. Dues and memberships, we had 650, and keep in mind we're kind of rolling the dice on some of these.
Oh, I don't, the expenditures I don't have an issue with. I was just wondering where we came with the base salary for the position.
We won't be stealing Mountain Homes.
No. I wish we could.
But that's kind of what we based a lot of our stuff on was and even kind of job description type of things was through Mountain Home and what they were doing and like she says, we kind of came in at what that one was and scaled it back.
Okay. Bobby, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Can you elaborate on the van that you were looking for, what purposes and things it could be used for?
Yes, so as you know, we do a lot of sprinkler repairs,
And so the thought behind the ban was to build bins inside and carry all of our stock and everything in the van. So that way the guys don't have to keep going to each spot to pick up more parts. They'll have the parts with them all the time.
So they,
and then everything will be undercover, and it won't get wet or anything.
More of a panel van than a I didn't know if it was a passenger van.
No, it's more of the like the little fleet vans.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I didn't know if it was passengers. I guess is what it was really looking
a cargo van type.
Cargo
yeah.
Van. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Mayor,
yes,
I got one more question. I don't know if the council wants us individually to bring up questions, or should we call John or the department head ourselves and ask questions, or are we all looking for answers on each individual's questions?
You know, I think we kind of run this at whatever is the preference of the council. You know, we'll kind of have this open discussion here, and then if there's things that you want to that come up that you want to ask later, you can do that. Or basically, we just want to make sure that you have the information you need to make these decisions. So you're certainly welcome to call anytime or stop by. Or
I guess my question is, I have questions on the requests. Does the council want each one of us to pursue answers individually or collectively tonight?
It's been a fairly short meeting, so I don't have issues with if we want to discuss some of it now. I mean, I think it'll ultimately keep our final budget night shorter too. So I'm good with that.
Yeah, we can discuss it tonight. Okay. I'm already got time.
I guess one of my questions is the acquisition of the city shop yard at 175. Has that been, I know we've been in the discussion with ACHD, has that actually materialized?
We are still in negotiation. So we've kind of gone from, originally we wanted to buy it, and then they wanted to have a piece of property yet. So then they started talking about maybe using some of the 20 acres, and then that became in trading the 20 acres for the shop. Now, we're hesitant to do that because we don't give up 20 acres to have the smaller acreage. So now we're looking at what would it cost us to build a shop on the 20 acres. You know, we're looking at all kinds of different options
okay.
here. I think Bob was, what was the last one you were talking about this morning?
One thing we were talking about is basically trading the same amount of acreage or slightly more of the Meadowview acreage for the 2.46 acres that's over here. The front, I think it's about 3.5 acres of the Meadowview property over there is perfect for what they need it for, not so much perfect for what we would use it for. So that might be something that was an equal value trade. But they are also open to the idea of just selling the Shortland shop area. We were just exploring all options to make sure we come up with something that was best for both parties.
Okay. I would hate to see us break up that 20 acres, I guess, Mayor.
Yeah, we kind of have gone full circle. We want to make sure we do the right thing and the best thing here. And I'm not sure that shop and that property over there will last us for a huge number of years, so we can add on to it and do many things over there, but I just want to make sure we know what we're doing before we do it. So,
last question I had, and I can't find it, was Messmer's property on the Greenbelt. Where did I see
it? I think
that?
It's right below the page 2.
Oh, it's on page 2 as a possible. How far are we from acquisition, or are we... Is there actually potential to, I don't know what we do with the Greenbelt if we couldn't.
Councilman Cardoza, that I put that in there more as a placeholder for right now. There has been talks with John, but he's real wishy-washy. And that's why I put it in the back of everything, is because it could be a possibility down the future. And it would be nice to acquire that property so we can continue the greenbelt. If not, we'd have to go up and around and then connect it to the subdivision.
So we would have to go up Orchard then, mm-hmm. and then continue back through the subdivision to the greenbelt on Young's?
Yeah.
And Ford. Okay.
And that, you know, last year when we were going to put that in the budget, that came out. Someone else was going to buy that and grant us
right,
that easement,
right.
And then that deal didn't
happen.
And that
didn't materialize.
Okay. So that's why we're still placeholding on this until we can get a affirmative
okay.
answer one way or the other.
A firm number from them.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I look at the next item, Greenbelt Acquisition, $300,000, what are we talking about there? Is that going from the Greenbelt existing to Strobel? Is that?
No, that's actually the Union Pacific. Right away we currently lease, that would be to purchase that property. Once again, that's more of a placeholder. That was a number they threw out when we were talking about it, but we need to get it appraised before we actually bought it.
So this $710,000 that is accumulated on page 2 is not included in your 503, John. Okay. So, in essence, we're looking at $1,200,000 approximately. Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
So, one thing that I wanted to talk about was our Humane Society. Our contract with them, as I read the contract, we're really not receiving the entire amount of service that the contract says we should be. Our police department is taking many of those calls that they shouldn't have to. So we've kind of started talking. Chief and I have been talking, and I actually talked to Commissioner Case about this, and we're kind of looking into some different options for Humane Society and animal control and that type of thing. One of the things that Chief and I were talking about was there's actually only 2 code enforcement officers for Olivetti County. We're thinking maybe it might be feasible to set up, have another code enforcement officer / animal control person. Problem with police officers doing that work is they don't have the tools with them to handle dogs and that type of thing. So we're going to start kind of looking into that and see what we can come up with and figure out between our police department and the county commissioners. And so I guess actually my recommendation on Humane Society increase would be not to increase, stay where we're at.
Can you just clarify, are you saying we're starting our own Humane Society or?
No, it would actually be through Ada County. If that happens, they would talk to the Humane Society about contracting with them, and then animal control services would actually be handled through Ada County, through Ada County Sheriff's Department.
So animals here would still go to the Humane Society, but we'd have to pay some sort of additional fee on a per animal basis, or
through the county. And we just kind of started talking about these things because there's. The problem with them, Humane Society, is their animal control officers, they've only got a couple anyway. So last night, with all the dogs loose, if you tried to call Humane Society, it would have done no good out here. They were busy in the big city. After, I forget how that all plays out, after hours, there's one officer on, and so they... The 24, maybe Chief can remember how that was.
That's correct, Mayor. From 6 o'clock in the evening until 8 o'clock the next morning, I believe that's about 16 hours, there is one person that's on call for all of Ada County. And so we tend to get a lot of our calls, especially in the summertime, our dog problems that sometimes turn into neighbor problems and fight situations. A lot of them do happen in the evenings once everybody gets home from work and trying to recreate a little bit and have their animals out.
So I'm not saying that we don't pay the Humane Society. I'm just saying that we don't increase the amount of pay, $5,000 that they asked for.
Do we have the authority to do that unilaterally, like just say how much? Because I know we wouldn't be able to do that with the county sheriffs. So we wouldn't be able to just say we're going to not pay whatever the increase is and still expect to get services. So I'm just curious, like, if we've talked with them at all or?
Well, the discussion that we had with the Humane Society, when we asked what their what they would like to see this year, they just said, oh, I don't know, make it $5,000. So there's no rhyme or reason for what the value is and what we're paying. But if we read the contract, we're not getting the service our contract says we should get. So Ada County Commissioners, when they asked them for an increase over the last couple of years, they just said no.
So I don't have my mind made up either way on it. I just want to make sure we don't end up in the lurch, like we say no, and then they're like, well, cool, we're not going to service you anymore, and then we don't have anything
right
in place. Would we want to consider, like we have the Sheriff's Department and the prosecutors come in and do a presentation, asking them to come in and do a presentation and explain the, I'm wondering if we kind of put the ball back into their court in that regard and say, you know, just like with all of our other county service providers, if there's an increase, you know, they come in and explain, here's what we did for you this past year, here's what your contract includes, this is why we've set it at the amount we've set it at. I mean, and we could even, I'm fine with sending them a copy of like the Ada County Prosecutor's contract, which very clearly has a metric for explaining how they set our fees. Because if they're not doing that, I mean, I think we're getting the impression they're not doing that, and so I would love to give them an idea of, like, here's kind of what we expect in order for you to be able to justify, like, why are we paying what we're paying?
Sure. Yeah, we can do that.
I think they're the only entity that has never given us a breakdown of cost. Have you ever got a breakdown there?
No.
I don't know if we've ever asked for it, though, and if they're not doing it for other cities, yeah. I mean, maybe it's not so much of a, like, we're, you know, just pushing CUNA away as much as this is kind of how they do things. I don't know.
I don't think we're asking for any accountability from them, and so they're just throwing figures out without
right
any documentation.
But this year it was obvious that yeah that was the case. Yeah. Okay. I will contact them. And
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
Last question I've got is the Anderson property acquisition. That's over on Strobel.
Councilman Cardoza, yes. That is 4 acres of the 5-acre parcel right off of Strobel Road that runs right along Indian Creek.
Have they consented to selling that property? I thought we were leasing it for 3 years.
We still are working on the lease, and once again, we need to get a get out there and find out the cost or appraise the land, so we can come up with a cost and an agreement with that. We're working on that right now.
The issue that we're having with that right now is if we go out there and we make those improvements and we don't have some kind of a price lockdown, then we're making those improvements with no benefit after 2 or 3 years. So
okay,
we're trying to avoid that.
That's
all I've got, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, John, Bobby.
I had a couple.
Okay.
I think they're for Bob. I'll start. Well, so I would love to hear some more about the City Hall basement wall and the City Hall basement shelving. And the pergola and seating, just kind of what they all encompass and whether they were things that we had anticipated already needing when we put together the cost projections for buying City Hall and that sort of thing.
The basement wall is basically to, in the basement area, is to get a secure area so we can separate, like if somebody was down there for a break, from the server and the permanent document area. So we basically be putting a wall up that ran east-west with a door that's locked that only be accessible to certain people. That way other people could go down there and use the area for a break, have a table down there. Just secure it up a little bit more.
Are those things, the documents and the server stuff, are those not included in, I thought we were planning on building like a fireproof room and that all the, that stuff would be included in that. Is that, am I misremembering?
No, not exactly. Basically, the entire area is fireproof, fire resistant because it's sprinkled. So the more I looked at that during construction, it wouldn't make any sense to have made a separate room because it's already all sprinkled. What I was going to do, and I still have the door for it, was put a door at the bottom of the stairs, make it lockable at the bottom of the stairs. But then we decided that it's probably better to leave a small area for a break area so people could go down and utilize that. So I do already have the door, which was originally planned to go in. We just decided it was probably a better fit to move that wall back about 15 feet and leave a approximately 30 by 15 area for someone to go down there and have a break.
So did you decide on not having the fireproof room thing when we were still working up cost stuff, or was that included in the purchase and so then we saved money by not doing it?
I wouldn't say we saved any money by not doing it because some of the material, like I said, the door, that was bought, and probably by the time other areas went over and stuff, that it probably balanced back out to about the same.
Okay.
So, no, I wouldn't say that we probably didn't save any money by not doing it.
Okay. And then the basement shelving.
The basement shelving, originally we were going to just get all the files and stuff off the ground. This is just a rack system so we can cover the files, get them all up off the ground, and then we can put some sort of cover or something over them if the sprinklers do go off, to give it as much shelter from the potential water damage as possible. Basically, I looked at a racking system, so we still have walkways between the racks, be able to access them from both sides. Just kind of came up with a good idea on how to do that. So this would help get the records up off the ground, for one. Right now we have them on pallets, so they are protected somewhat. But this would be able to give us the opportunity to put some plastic or tarps or something draped down over them and be able to utilize the full height of the basement with storage.
Okay, and then the pergola and seating, is that for back patio or is that for front area?
That'd be for the front grass area.
Okay. The reason I'm questioning these is, I'm sure everybody remembers, I was like the one person who voted for the other city hall, and I was very concerned about additional, like being asked right away for more money for this place, and so whether we were truly like looking at the final cost. So I'm just nervous that it's starting already, that we are asking for more costs that I feel like we should have planned for before, and anyway, so. And then the facility energy upgrades, is that for senior center or where is that?
That would be for all facilities. Okay. It's just a continuous thing so we can start making improvements, do more LED retrofits, stuff like that.
I'm all over that. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Okay.
Mayor, thank you. John, I got a question for you for overall numbers from last year.
Okay.
We started the year what contingency?
We started the year at 1.5 and some change, and that's our reserve balance. We had moved some money, so in other words, we had budgeted X amount in carryover, and I'll get you that number. And the council had adopted certain expenditures, which utilized some of that reserve, which brought us down to 1.2 million in contingency. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So we take that off the top; it goes into contingency. We ended the year pretty close to what we forecasted. We're at 1.5. And, well, let me get you that number really quick here. It's really slow. Sorry about that. Sorry, I'm having a really slow connection. Until it comes up, I'm going to say it was just 1.5 and some change was our reserve balance that we ended up with at the end of the year in 16, FY in 2016.
And then you're projecting to finish at 1.8.
1.8. And I can go through how I calculated that.
I guess where I'm going with this is that didn't we start off with a deficit of last year of $400-something thousand with the budget?
You know, I don't recall. I can probably pull those files up, but we were probably very similar. And so that's why I mentioned we had X amount of reserves that we forecasted. We took, or the city council took some of that off the top and used that for one-time expenditures, and then brought the, it brought the contingent, the remaining balance went into contingency at 1.2. So we actually ended up with cash reserves at the end of the year of 1.5. So, and I'm hoping that's answering your question, but.
Yeah, I mean, answer your question. I guess where I'm going at is that we even had a deficit last year that when we approved, I believe, a $400-something thousand deficit mm-hmm. in our budget, yet we still came out $300,000 ahead at the end of the year, starting with the deficit. So I guess, you know, obviously I'd like to be at a, you know, a zero across where there's no deficit.
Sure.
But, you know, we did the same thing last year. We started with a huge deficit, and we still overcame that by the end of the year.
Yep.
Not that I want to do that every year, but I just, that would help me a little bit. Because I really don't know how you're going to cut $500,000 out of here to make it a balanced budget. And I don't even take in the full everything to get the 200 and something thousand in levies to increase the spending limit is going to only cover half of that. So, I mean, even still, to try to find $250,000 out of here could be a little challenging, I guess.
Yes. So what would happen is, so you've got kind of a couple of things going on. You've got, like I mentioned earlier, you got some ongoing expenditures. Those are going to have to be covered by some sort of an ongoing revenue source. And we've got that forecasted in, but, you know, as you know, I mean, those things can wane over time depending on what the economy does. And we're seeing some things in the economy, not to say that you know, anything's going to happen tomorrow, but inflation's happening. It's just about doubled from this period last year. So some things are happening in the economy now. Building activity could slow down as a result, and it may stay at par. Who knows? But those numbers are forecasted in with a little bit of a reduction to try to mitigate some of the impact of that. You also have sales tax revenue sharing. That's another large item. That number's been growing. The economy takes a hit, that number will wane a little bit. Liquor revenue is always stable. So those ongoing revenues are covering, in addition to the prospectus for property tax levy increase, which, it, you know, if that's going to happen, now's the time to do it. but the other items that are in that yield that additional deficit are all one-time items. So generally speaking, the thinking is on these one-time items, while you have these reserves projected, have 1.8 million projected in cash reserves, is to utilize some of that to pay for those one-time costs, and they're not going to recur again. So you're pulling money out of the money you've saved, and going forward, that, you know, the deficit would not likely be there again if the economy continues as it is. I'm hoping that makes sense.
Well, no, yeah, it makes sense. I know that one of the concerns that we had was that. You know, one of the things that we wanted to take the levy increases last year was to have those reserves for something happens, and then to spend them, I guess, would not accomplish that. So, I mean, that's something we can discuss. I just was trying to understand that. Your projection of a, and I don't think I have, and I know you gave it to me, or I thought you had it somewhere. If we were to take the foregone and the 3%, it would lower our levy rate to 0.029 or something like that?
Yeah, that's on, yeah.
Page 3?
Yeah. Let me get that number for you.
Oh, the page 3 was what the levy increase is and all those.
Yeah.
0.003 levy?
So let me give you what that would be. So as it stands today, based on the numbers we have available, property values, market values, taxable values, if the city levied the max property tax amount to the $266,000, the levy rate would be about 0.0029. Right now we're at 0.003 and some change. If you do nothing with the taxes, leave them as they were last year, it will drop it to 0.026. So we're way beyond, or way below, we're below where we were last year, of course, way below our limit of 0.009.
Okay. No, that makes sense. I appreciate that. Thank you. I had two items to discuss. Bobby, you sent out a 5-year plan, and I appreciate that. I think that it helped me a lot. I don't know if the other council members had a chance to look at it, seeing what you're projecting for your, especially your expenditures, not necessarily the increase in population, but the expenditures of what you needed for the next 5 years based on our growth. And I said that was great. I liked seeing those things. One of the things you had on there that I know we've talked about was the, and you have it on here, is the not included items is the playground equipment. I think that one of the things that our parks we need is a lot more of that. I think we need to set something up, I would like to see something set up, some sort of reoccurrence on doing that. To throw something out there to council, I know that we discussed the City Hall replenishment, and I thought we discussed about possibly talking about that at a later date to use that for something else, and I know this time we haven't discussed any of that, but I would be in consideration to take that $24,000 that we've been using as a replenishment and change that to a, you know, like a playground sinking fund or something like that. So the money's still there. It's not costing us any more money. I know it's a little less than what Bobby's been asking for, but I think in the long run that might help. But just a something to consider to use that funding for that. My goal at the time when we discussed doing that was to find something to use that money for another activity, and I think that would be a great thing to add or discuss. And I don't know if council had any comments, or mayor, if you had any comments about.
Yeah, that would be fine. I mean, I think that just to be placeholding it for like we are is good, and then you know we come up with an idea, and that certainly is a good idea. That's one thing that I think we get quite a bit of comment on is some of the parks need more playground equipment for toddlers and. Need a little bit more range and variety and more stuff. I mean, we had the, when we had the snow cones with the mayor out here, we had the water slide and the lines looked like Disneyland. And we could have had 3 water slides out there and still had lines. So there's just a lot of kids out and they all need something to do. So I know that's something that Cardoza has talked about was more things for the kids to do. So I certainly think that would be an honorable use of that money.
And then, I don't know if anybody had a comment on that before I go to my next item.
He's thinking about it.
I do have a question that might answer. The impact fees that we're charging now on new construction, what are the allocation of those funds?
As far as so those are to help with the growth. So it's not necessarily adding to what we have; it's getting more. So right now we have a certain amount of acreage per capita, and we need to stay on task with that. So you know we need to start looking at land acquisition and then building there. And then once we have that, then we can go back and you know like add bathrooms, start the parks that need it.
We're also restricted, though, right, in mm-hmm. using it in areas that would, like, where the new growth is, where yeah. they would be. So we can't, like, go to an area of Cuna that's, we can't use it at, like, Bernie Fisher to add something there. That would totally be inappropriate. But if there was a bunch of development near an existing park, then mm-hmm. there might be some ability to use some of the funding to improve that park also.
Okay. I guess my question is it just for acquisition of property or... can we put structures on that acquisition?
Yes, it's acquisition and then installing new parks.
Okay.
We couldn't use it for, I mean, to me, a good example of, and correct me if I'm wrong, of a park that could
possibly use impact fees would be like Arbor Ridge, mm-hmm. Because there is a lot of growth that's happening around that area. So could we use any impact fee money to improve Arbor Ridge, or does it have to be for structures for a new land acquisition and then put structures on it?
We can to a point. So we have to keep the same level of service. So in order for us to do something out there, we have to have something somewhere else. So like let's say if we want to put a new bathroom in Arbor Ridge, then we need to be planning on putting or having land and putting one somewhere else.
If we use the impact fee money for that, okay, that makes sense.
How much is that impact fee per home?
$939.
Is that carried forward in our budget anywhere, Joe?
Yeah, Councilmember Cardoza, you'll see that in 2 weeks at the council meeting budget workshop in the park impact fee fund. There's a significant amount of money in there, and you'll have a full summary of everything and the FIFO inventory of those and when they sunset, and you'll be able to see all that.
Okay, it's not on the budget as of right now.
Nope, it's not a general fund.
Funds carry forward.
Exactly. It's in a different fund, separate from the general fund.
Okay.
And then the other thing I wanted to talk about based on going off of the park stuff. John, I saw on here, and I know it's just tentative, and maybe been maybe what a consensus was, but regarding the Ada County Sheriff option, you plugged in option number 2. And I recall option number 3 also included the SRO officer for the summer. And what was the difference in the dollar amount for that?
I might want to just clarify with John, but option 2 listed, there was a base option, option 1, and option 2. Option 2 is the one with the SRO.
Fully loaded. Like that, option 2 was the biggest one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought there was an option 3 was the one with the, so this one includes the, having the SRO here part-time for summer.
Yeah, that's the highest one. That was the one recommended by
John. Okay, all right. Then that answers my question. Thank you.
And option 3 buys him new shoes. We left that one off.
There's nothing wrong with your shoes.
So one thing we've tried to do with putting together this budget is to look at the general fund, look at the expenses that we have that are ongoing and reoccurring and won't go away, and then try to kind of tie that to what our associated income is that also is reoccurring, ongoing, and won't go away, so that we don't have to, like when the economy tanked the last time, the city took some substantial hits and had to make quite a few cuts in areas that weren't comfortable, and Councilmember Cardoza can probably tell you all about that. But
those were the good days. Yes.
Yeah. So we've tried to kind of keep those a little bit separate, so that's why a lot of this, when we're showing the deficit, it's not so much a deficit as, I mean, there is money to cover this stuff, but we want to try and keep those things separate so that it makes sense, so that the taxpayers, all of a sudden, if there is a downturn in the economy, we don't all of a sudden have to hit them with a tax increase in order to keep the level of police service that we would be enjoying at that time, and certainly don't want to charge people more on taxes when the economy is bad. So that's kind of the way we've been doing it and putting this together. So and then using those other fees that, I mean, we're getting a lot from planning and zoning and building permits and so on and so forth, and those can come and go, and trying to use those things for just trying to get ahead and or at least keep caught up. So that's kind of how we laid it out. So it's a little bit otherwise, if we were kind of status quo most of the time and our budget was kind of what our budget was and the 3% increase was the only thing that counted, we would certainly bring a balanced budget each time. But that's kind of why we've separated those out. And actually, when you look at our budget, it shows a deficit. So that's kind of how we got there.
Mayor, if I could, as a council person, I would like to thank the city for the carryover of almost $1.8 million, that says we're pretty conservative. I think every department head is doing their job. I have to thank John for doing a very easy, or making it look like an easy job for me with all this paperwork. It's very easy for me to follow anymore compared to the last few years. So I think the entire city staff is in deserving some praise for what they have done for the size of the city. I think we're one of the few cities in the state of Idaho that is debt-free. So, no bonds, no issues. So, congratulations. Now the fight begins.
I know we have a public hearing on all this, so I guess I don't know how much I can say today or not without...
It's all on the record, so you can say as much as you want.
I have no problem, I have no problem for sure taking the annexation and the new construction. I mean, that's just, I think, a given. The other two, obviously, we can discuss. I don't know if there's, Mayor, if you think that there is any way to sharpen a pencil on any of this stuff, or do you believe you guys have already done that to this point before we got here?
Well, I think we're kind of getting to the point to where the need is there. So, I mean, obviously we can make whatever cuts we have to make. I guess when we're talking about the 3% increase and the foregone, that's only the 3% is only 60,000 and the foregone is 57 or whatever it is. I got them there, but I'd have to fill my glasses. So, I mean, we can obviously make those cuts, but like I said, the thing that we really wanted to try to project was that with the police protection and that type of thing. Those monies need to keep coming, so that's kind of the way we've tried to keep the city on its feet and debt free and that type of thing. However, I mean, I don't like to raise taxes more than anybody else, but with this type of growth, I think that's actually the best time to take those increases. It has the least amount of impact on the citizens when you take them when the economy is the way it is and the growth is happening the way it is. So that's kind of where I stand with it, but certainly is council's discretion. But, I mean, reality of it is that that's kind of why we're having these discussions here. I'd just soon we hammer those things out as soon as we can, so when we do get to public hearing, we're all kind of knowing where each other's going.
And I understand most of this, and I think what we're, you know, 4 years ago, you would have asked, I would have told you that the 3% was a true tax and is more of a spending limit than it is necessarily a tax. I mean, I still would have liked to seen, I think we're still outpacing commercial faster than what I would like, and I think probably more than anybody would like. I think we still would like more commercial. I guess my always hang up is going to be, and just a perfect example of using last year's, we took additional $52,000 or $60,000 in the foregone levy, yet we still came out $300,000 ahead. So I guess I have a hard time of why do we need to take that money? We're still coming out ahead. But I also understand it's a spending limit that's going to have to be increased every year just to keep up with what we're doing. So I guess we can.
Well, my goal as a mayor would always be to make the impact on the citizens as pain-free as possible. I can't remember ever receiving my tax bill thinking, boy, I hope it went up this year. You know, it's just, it's not the way I live, and it's not the way anybody wants to live. So I guess I take a lot of pride in the fact that we have a great police department and the things that they do for us, and you say that also, I know, and so I'm not saying you
don't. Oh, I know this.
I would hate to ever have anything happen where all of a sudden we have to reduce that level of service because now all of a sudden we don't have the funding to cover it, or else we do have to go hit the taxpayers in the pocketbook when it really hurts. So that's kind of the way I've always tried to. That's why we ran the fire district for a good number of years, and our levy rates never really seemed to go up or down much. Unless there was a huge thing within the economy, so we tried really hard not to impact the taxpayers any more than possible, and I'm real pleased that we're able to run this city on a 003 when other cities are run to 009, and I think we're doing a pretty good job with that. So that's kind of where I come at that with.
No, I understand. I respect that, Mayor. I guess, I've always, my opinion is it's always hard to get it back when after it's gone. My 49 years, I've gotten one refund check, so, or I guess one check that surprisingly that I got from a certain president. But, I don't have a problem with it. But we can wait and see what the public comes and tells us.
Okay.
Mayor, the bills on Pat, John, we're showing the fiscal year ending 2017 actual at $1,073,000. Your budget for fiscal year 2018 is $965,000. Is that ultra conservative?
The primary difference is that it is conservative. There is an element of conservatism built in there. In the primary line item that we pared back a little bit is we took the forecast for the planning and zoning revenue. As, mm-hmm. as we talked about, it's a substantial level. And if it finishes the year, the next 3 months that as we forecasted, it's a large number. We're over $400,000 over what we planned. My fear and my belief is that it is absolutely unsustainable. At some point in time, it's going to falter, and I don't know if it can sustain itself into the new year at that level. So the new value, to answer your question, factors in a 10% reduction in where we forecast the end of the year to finish this year. I see signs in the marketplace. Number one is inflation. The Federal Reserve has acted with rate increases. If they decide that inflation's starting to run out of control, they're going to likely raise rates again. They'll start to tighten money supply by selling T-bills to the Fed banks. And so what will happen is there will be a domino effect down the line. Likely building will decrease, especially residential, which we're primarily experiencing right now. So long story short, there is some conservatism built in there. It's primarily in that building activity line.
The other thing was property tax revenue. Looks like you're at $2,067,086, which is our actual. With new homes coming online, shouldn't they be more a higher property tax revenue?
Well, so the way it works on the property tax revenue, it doesn't really matter how many homes come on. You're limited to the dollar value that you can levy. So that's where the 3%, the foregone, the new construction annexation. So you can only increase the levy by a maximum of $266,000 this year. So let's just say we double in size in the next year. What that's going to do is likely put downward pressure, regardless of what you levy. You levy $266,000, it's going to blow through that, and it's going to put downward pressure on that. If the opposite happens, it's not going to change the revenue source. The revenue source is fixed at what you set it at. So the dollar value that you levy is fixed at that, regardless of the growth or lack thereof. So a lot of people obtain the misconception that if growth happens or actually if there's a levy increase, a lot of people think that with a levy increase, oh, the tax rate went up, that my taxes are going up automatically. And that's not true, because it's a function of the total taxable value and the dollar value that you levy. So that if you're growing, you levy a fixed dollar amount, and you keep growing, it's going to put downward pressure on that levy rate, and that dollar value that you levy is going to spread out over more property. So ultimately, everybody's going to pay less. Okay. But the dollar value doesn't go away.
Who establishes the mill levy? Is that done by state?
It's the county.
And the county,
yes. And we can calculate it here depending on what we levy, because we know primarily what the tax values are right now, the marketable values. They do adjust through the course of the summer as they go through different roll books. They find things that are in error. They have people that go through the Board of Corrections, and then the state does the utility property, and they don't have it till, geez, almost September. So generally speaking, we're pretty close on these mill rates.
Okay.
They will adjust very slightly.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Anything further? Mull it over and talk about it next time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thanks, John. I know you put a lot of time and effort and hard work into this. And there were several nights he hung out here late because something wasn't exactly the way he thought it ought to be, so he'd start over. So appreciate that very much, John.
You bet. Hey, just one thing for council. So kind of the way we plan this is in 2 weeks, the next city council meeting is another budget workshop. We had planned to put forth the public works items and the other smaller budget items, trash and things of that nature. The thinking was at that point in time we would set a tentative budget and then follow that with a public hearing at the next meeting. So if you don't think that we can get there at the next meeting with all of that, then we probably want to schedule an interim meeting sometime between now and maybe the few days after the next council meeting. We've got a public hearing that will occur mid-August, and we do have to publish that for two consecutive weeks. So just think about that. And if you feel comfortable with where you're at, and namely the property tax line item, then we can probably get that done at the next meeting.
John, you're thinking like you're saying mid-August as far as the publication. We would have the next meeting, and then the following. You're thinking the first of the August 1st being the public hearing.
Well, the actual public hearing is mid-August, and so we have to publish the hearing notice two consecutive weeks prior. And so really what we have is we have a little bit of time after the next council meeting between that and those 2 weeks, if that makes sense.
So really, if we have any concerns by the July 18th, we can have those resolved.
Yeah.
Another meeting after July 18th, if there's anything that
exactly
has shown up between.
If that's okay with everybody, we can get to the 18th. Okay. Hopefully we'll have everything hammered out. If we can't resolve things, then just know that we're likely going to have to set up an interim meeting between then and probably the 1st of August. Is that okay with everybody?
Okay. And you're looking Public Works and Parking back the next meeting?
Right. And Public Works is going to be fairly extensive, but again, it doesn't involve property taxes and the like, so it's a little simpler. And then you've got trash, you've got parking pack fees, capital projects fund, which feeds from the general fund, and latecomers, and I think that's pretty much it. So not a lot volume-wise, but individually.
Well, I do appreciate all your time. I mean, like Mr. Cardoza says, it makes it very easy.
It's all good.
I do appreciate that.
That's cool.
Thank you, Mayor.
Good.
Lies. They're all lies.
I know. They don't believe me anyways. It's right.
Okay. That brings us to, is there anything anybody wants to mention, Mayor, Council announcements?
Mayor, I just had one follow-up. I know Chris, you sent out an email regarding the downtown. Was there a plan was on that?
I had heard from you and Council President Cardoza. I hadn't heard from the other two council members.
This was on having an additional workshop, right, versus just doing it during a council meeting?
Yeah, for the downtown, the bids came back, $300,000 plus over what was the engineer estimate. Whether you wanted to have a workshop to discuss it or if you wanted to just discuss it in council meeting.
Assuming we don't have, I mean, I don't want to make council meetings super, super long, but that would be my preference because we're all already going to be here.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay. Good.
sounds like the city clerk needs to find another grant somewhere.
Well, I spent all weekend trying to $10,000 and $20,000 piece it together with different grants and haven't quite got there, so, but I am looking.
$300,000 is what it came out.
Yeah, I'm afraid we're in that market. As you recall, there was one or two projects, I think, that Gordon had budgeted for that we had to bring in additional funding for just because everybody's busy, so they're mocking up their bids, and things cost more than they should right now. So,
and if you recall, we went through a very similar period just before the last economic downturn, almost identical. Gordon was trying to get these public works projects done. We wouldn't even have bidders sometimes, and the one bidder that did come through was exorbitant. So hopefully we're not heading in that same direction.
Well, Bob's got his back, that's good.
Yeah.
So things are exploding and you're getting more conservative?
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Just I thought.
All right. Then I move we adjourn to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 74-206D for the purpose of discussing an indigency request and pursuant to Idaho Code 74-206B for the purpose of discussing a personnel matter.
Second. Motion is made and seconded. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Wanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
That motion carries. And for, so we're going to start out with discussing the indigency request. Who do we need here for that?